growing up alongside them, learning from our families how to fish. We've reached adulthood now, and we know now how to set the sails, how to look after our boats and nets. We've learned where the sandbars are and the shallows that we are to avoid. We know just where to set the nets for the shoals of fish, but as well those locations where we must bait our hooks and cast our lines. We are skillful in sorting and cleaning, drying and marketing our fish so that we can sell our daily catch. We are hardy and accustomed to venture out in foul weather, but we are cautious so that we watch the clouds and the winds to determine where the storms will arise that cause the dangerous strong waves to develop in such a shallow lake. So, we and our families have grown prosperous, and we can engage hired help to help us, employees such as those working with Zebedee in his boats in our reading this morning. Among our number are Andrew, Peter, James, and John. They know the trade well. Their long hours, their long practice skills, and their deep learning of the various techniques and nets used in catching specific kinds of fish, they've all passed through their minds now as Jesus invites them to join his inner circle of followers. But this was a carpenter's son. He was from Nazareth. He wasn't a fisher like these folks. He came from a small village up in the hills. It lay some distance from the lake. And that town where Jesus lived was overshadowed by nearby Sepphoris, which was a city. It was the capital of King Herod Antipas. And Joseph, Jesus' father, is a builder. He would have likely made his living working in that city, walking the short distance from the town of Nazareth into Sepphoris each day to the construction sites that were there. And Jesus may well have accompanied his father over to Sepphoris to work on those new buildings. So that's what Jesus knew, carpentry, construction. What could he know about these lives of these people who were fishing? What would strike me most about Jesus' invitation, if I'd been one of those people hearing or present as he invited those men, what I would have thought is, if I were there to hear that invitation, what's going to make me change from these normal routines that I've been a part of as being a fisher? We've settled ourselves into these routines. It's to this event in Mark's gospel, the calling of Jesus' first disciples, that we Christians look as our prime example of what vocation or what our calling in life means. Vocation means that you're drawn to what you feel is suited to what you're doing and to which you should give all. It means having something that you are doing that you feel is your purpose in life and for which you have special skills. Today, having a vocation may just mean what you do for a living, your occupation and your career. But this modern definition derives from the Christian belief that God has created each of us with gifts and talents oriented towards a specific purpose and a way of life. And for the Christian, a vocation is not just something that God calls us to do and that can be a job or also any work where we can be of service to others. For a Christian, vocation is as well the person God calls us to be. When Jesus first called his first disciples by the Lake of Galilee, it wasn't just so that they could help him in his work. It was so that their lives could be transformed through his friendship and love into those human lives as God intended them to fully live. In the earliest years of the church that Jesus and those first disciples were to begin, Christians were a persecuted minority. Becoming a Christian had significant implications for a person's life, and it meant significant disruption. The Latin words vocatio, or call, from which our word vocation comes, the call or vocatio to Christianity meant disruption of the usual established life to which someone was accustomed. Vocation meant that for early Christians, many parts of their lives would no longer be the same or take place as they once did. Yes, their former lives spent fishing would have accustomed Jesus' first followers to the difficult work and the long hours of their mission ahead as missionaries and founders of this new religion. Their commitment and the sacrifices that they would make in their future lives would be enormous. Their character was already apparent in their willingness to leave their nets and their boats to follow Jesus and to take up the itinerant ministry that he would lead. However, I don't think that anything really prepared them, or us today for that matter, for such upheaval as those first disciples faced. Those times that I've asked myself, what am I to do with my life? When I wondered what direction I should take or what purpose is there now for me to be here that I'm to fulfill, I've always felt sure that God has a plan for me. All the same, I can assure you that as I've sought what job to take or whether I should get married or how to incorporate some religious discipline into my daily life, God has always surprised me. I may have assumed that I had some fixed point ahead towards which I should be directing myself, and yet some development always bisected the course upon which I was headed. Even so, that new path was always to lead me to something richer and more fulfilling than I could ever have calculated for myself. I had thought that as I made the transition of what for me had been a challenge as I retired from parish ministry, as I considered what being a priest now meant for me, now that I was retired, well, I had made my plans. I thought of traveling. I was studying French to prepare myself for places to which my wife and I wished to journey. And then suddenly, I received a call from my area bishop asking me to return back to being employed, to a posting to which I'd first been called 35 years ago. That was a surprise. A few years ago, I'd begun to learn Spanish so that I might better appreciate the cultures in which I visited as I vacationed in Latin America. I'd not taken up learning Spanish with any idea that I would ever be working in that language, and yet suddenly, again, I found myself working in an organization of the first Spanish-speaking parish in the Anglican Diocese of Toronto. Up to that point, I had no thoughts. I was simply seeking a diversion from the task of what I was doing in my ordinary parish work at the time, and then suddenly, this new path was there for me. People often have wondered, when I first thought I had a calling to ordain priesthood, even my father doubted that I had a calling because I never felt some dramatic voice announcing me that this is the course that I should take up. Instead, my call for me was as though one door after another kept opening up as I stood hesitantly before it, wondering if this is where I should go. I never felt that I had some predetermined ticket that entitled me to enter those doors, but it was instead as though the other doors around me were all closed. So they being shut, I had no way but to go forward into seeking ordination. It continues to astonish me that my first experience of working for the church came about because of an order for national service on behalf of my country, a notice of conscription that I received from my draft board. Vocation for me has always been an experience I've undertaken as surprised by what was happening to me. So I can very much relate to what was happening to Peter and Andrew and James and John. What they were thinking about is Jesus asked them to join him on the way. There was nothing in their lives that could have led them to expect this. So I keep attending to what Jesus might want from me. And I'm never quite sure from what direction Jesus will address me. If I have my eyes focused ahead, I often find that where I'm to go, not there, but because God's signal is coming at the far corners of my vision. If I'm listening for a pronouncement, it's not what is most shrilly blaring, but it's from the silence which follows that God comes to command me, just as happened for Elijah. Thus Jesus took a route that passed along the waterfront, where fishers were drawing up and casting their nets or mending. He said to them, to some of them, follow me, and I will make you fish for people. They might have asked themselves, what does this person know about fishing? They might have hesitated at the thought of leaving their father, their families, and their fellow workers behind, and what this would mean for the livelihoods of those others who depended upon them, as well as what it meant for them. They would have had little notion of what lay ahead for them if they followed the way that Jesus was taking. They would face their own frustrations and disillusionment and disbelief. But that voice that they first heard at the lakeside calling them was always there to return them back to where God wanted them to be. They came to rely on that voice, even as it veered them off the path that they would have otherwise chosen for themselves. And I'm coming more and more to trust in such redirections for myself in the course of my life. Amen.